Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Puck knocked out to the line. Gustafson fed the left circle. Shaw put it across. Right circle. Kane shoots. He scores! Oh, that goal was pretty as a picture. Shaw in the left wing circle found Kane all alone in the right circle, and he snapped it past Domingue, who was still covering the far post. And now it's 5-2 Hawks.
He goes to Burns instead, who backskates, who goes to Marleau, down low to Thornton in front. Pavelski, score! Tic-tac-toe, Joe Pavelski finishes it off, and there it is, point number 1,300 for the great Joe Thornton.
Penguins taking that a dangerous lead past the Crosby. Hooks a penalty, giving up, and he's going to the net. Shoot, scores! Sidney Crosby still gets it done. Oh, hallelujah, Hollywood.
Patrick Kane! A goal to go along with two assists!
And there was a little gift for Joe Thornton to bank in as he was trailing on the rebound.
Oh, slap me silly, Sidney. When we all get the ball,
we all get the best. Everything. Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, after 20 years, he finally figured out which Hart Trophy candidate is his favorite player. It's NHL senior producer Rory Boylan.
You gotta love Joe Thornton. He's so underappreciated, but he's been one of the best players in the NHL consistently since almost when he entered the league, but certainly since he landed in San Jose, maybe a year or two.
So he's finally proven himself to you.
Yeah, it usually takes me a long time. Yeah, like I was saying before off air, Brendan Shanahan became my favorite player in the last 1 or 2 years of his career.
And now he's everybody's favorite executive in this city.
Consider it a career achievement award.
Sure.
You're my
nice.
Favorite player.
Nice. Well, we won't take nearly that long to get to the good stuff here on Tape to Tape. You can, of course, find us at sportsnet.ca or subscribe via iTunes. Check out Rory on Twitter at Rory Boylan. I am at Dixon on Sports. As mentioned, yeah, MVP candidates. Man, talk about something that was once locked and loaded. It was Patrick Kane's to lose, and it was inconceivable that he could lose it. Now there are definitely some other names in the mix. We're going to touch on a few of them. We're also going to talk further about Big Joe Thornton with Brett Hedekin, who is a color man for the Sharks radio broadcast. But did you ever think it possible that, I mean, how recently, I'd say within the past even 2 weeks, it would be unthinkable someone other than Patrick Kane could win the Hart?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was his from, I don't know, the halfway point of the season or earlier. He's been running away.
Yeah,
he's been running away with the scoring title, and he still is. He's still 10 points up, so the Art Ross is his.
And the Hart probably is too, but
I don't think it's a slam dunk anymore. But the way you're seeing, first of all, Sidney Crosby is now front and center in this conversation.
It's like he heard us talking about how good Connor McDavid was on this podcast all the time.
And how quiet has his year been, considering he's supposed to be the face of the NHL?
Sure.
This guy could finish third. He might even finish second in NHL scoring by the time it's all said and done. He's 6 points behind Jamie Benn right now with, I think, 10 games, 9 games to go, something like that. And the Pittsburgh Penguins have kind of been rising from their slow start, and they're looking, you know, like they're not a team that you would want to face in the first round. And Crosby's leading the way, and it's been so quiet because we've been talking so much about Connor McDavid's rookie season, which he missed a chunk of because he got injured, how much Patrick Kane has been running away with it. And here comes Sidney Crosby just quietly rising to the top, and now he is front and center. I don't think it's a lock anymore that Patrick Kane is the Hart, and I think you're going to have some people who don't want to vote for him in the first place.
Sure. So. Fair enough. We'll see how everything that went down in the offseason, if it does, in fact, play into how the voting shakes out. Quick aside with Crosby, once again, continuing the trend of when either he or Malkin goes out of the lineup, the guy who is in the lineup seems to go to another level. Let's just cut right to the speculative chase here. Should they examine trading Malkin then if this is the clear pattern? I mean, maybe they should examine it anyways. I don't know. But if you were ever looking to fill out your roster which seems to be what they're perpetually mm-hmm. trying to do. I mean, Crosby Malkin is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would say it's better to have a team, or I mean, in a perfect world, you have those two guys and you build around, but it hasn't been working for a long time in Pittsburgh.
No, it hasn't. But the last time they traded a center, Jordan Staal, they weren't the same team anymore. And if you trade a Malkin, I mean, that's taking it to another level.
Sure, it almost made more sense to do when they traded. If you were going to trade Malkin, yes. You never trade Jordan Staal.
Yes, and that was a different situation. There was contract considerations and all that. But, I mean, it doesn't hurt to look around. I'm curious what you would get. You're going to have the salary cap implications of what
and
that means.
And a guy who tends to be hurt a fair bit, I think,
sure.
Safe to say.
I think you can overlook that if you're trying to acquire an Evgeny Malkin. You're not worrying too much about that. You're looking. He's a supreme offensive talent who's going to be your top line center. But there is that risk to it. I don't know. I just think they need to do. I mean, your window is open as long as these guys are leading the way. You need to do a better job of drafting the guys to fill out around them and just making those subtle signings and those little trades to add that. You don't need stars on their wings necessarily. You just need the guys who can, you know, play with them. And
sure.
They don't need to do anything special. They just need to
find
take a pass from Sidney Crosby. Exactly. Chris Kunitz is not somebody that you would expect to go and score a whole bunch of goals on his own somewhere else, but he does it when he's playing with Crosby or Malkin, and you need somebody like that who's just, you can plug him into the lineup and he's reliable, you know what you're going to get out of him, and they just haven't done a very good job of those kind of depth players. But I wouldn't trade Malkin. I mean, I would like to see what you would get in a trade offer for Malkin first, but I don't think I could trade him. Center is such an important position.
Well, speaking of trades and centers and important positions and great players, I mean, you rewind back to last June. The San Jose Sharks were doing everything they could, basically, to alienate Joe Thornton, and it seemed like that relationship could conceivably come to an end. Here we are now, around the same time Crosby kicked it up. Same for Joe Thornton. Tell us why exactly he's pulled himself, I think, into this race and made himself number one in your heart.
Well, 70 points in 73 games. I mean, at this point in his career, he's 36. He's turning 37 in July. You're expecting a guy to decline. And Joe Thornton's just not declining. Whether you're looking at his points or you're looking at his Corsi numbers, those advanced stats, he's the best on the team. And that's where he's kind of been underappreciated. And, you know, when the Sharks were maybe looking to move him and Marlowe out after they got that reverse sweep by the Kings.
Reverse sweep.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That was ugly. You know, you're thinking when they were tossing this idea out there that they might part ways, or it seemed like they might part ways. I'm like, I don't know if you can really realize how much you would miss a guy like Joe Thornton. Well, yeah, he sets up a lot of goals, but his possession game is so solid. There's no replacing that. You just can't replace that easily. And he's still 36. He's still leading the team in these advanced stat numbers. Yeah. He's still leading the team in scoring. He is easily, I think, their most important player. I mean, you could make a case for Joe Pavelski, who's also having a really strong year. But, I mean, Joe Thornton, he's just so consistent. He gives you the same thing every single year. And this whole thing about him not being a playoff player is totally bunk in my book. 100 points in 132 playoff games. And he was awesome in that series against LA a couple years ago. He was, again, I think he was their best player in that series. And yet, at the end of it, here he is, maybe on the trade block, maybe trying to get run out of town and getting all this bad press about being a bad playoff player. But he was their best player that series, easily.
This guy's not really in the mix, but a goalie won last year. And I think just even a bigger picture conversation about how things have gone with Roberto Luongo is in order. How much as a, get ready for it, diehard Panthers fan,
drink,
has he meant to this team since he started the second chapter of his South Florida time?
He's just been kind of the steady hand. Without him, there was really a void there in net. And with him back, I remember the day they got him back, I was so happy. I never thought that they would ever get Luongo back again. It was such a sad day when he left and such a joyful day when he came back, but he's like Thornton. He's consistent. You know what you're going to get. He'll have his bad game here or there, and he had some bad games coming out of the All-Star break, but again, like, he's not declining. He's putting up solid numbers again this season. And I think that's the most important thing that you can ask for in a goalie, and why the best guys are the best guys, is you know what you're going to get night in, night out. You don't have to worry about, like, if we're talking about, like, we're talking about San Jose later, and we can talk about their goalies. Their goalies have been, I mean, there's a reason why they went out and got James Reimer.
Sure.
And that's because Martin Jones wasn't, they weren't confident Martin Jones carrying the whole way. But with a guy like Roberto Luongo, you know what you're going to get.
And Montoya's been good.
Yeah, Montoya. I mean, Montoya's always been good in a backup role. He's the perfect backup goalie, and he's happy in that role. And he's perfect next to Roberto Luongo. So, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Like, Luongo's not in a Vezina hunt or anything like that this year, I don't think. But he's the exact kind of goalie that you would want. Just the steady hand. That's all you can say, the steady hand.
A more viable Hart candidate. We're going to touch on the crappy Canadian teams at the end of this podcast, but do you think Erik Karlsson gets any consideration? I guess if Ottawa was in the playoffs, maybe, but...
Definitely if they were in the playoffs. I don't know. To me, I don't think you can give a guy the Hart Trophy. I'm one of those people, if your team doesn't make the playoffs, I don't know how you can be the most valuable player. Do you agree with that? I know that's
technically no, I don't. Like, I understand the spirit of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of distance traveled, so to speak, right? Like, how much does guy, at the end of the day, it's what's the variance for a team if this player is on or off? And if you take it off and they're going to be 30 points worse, then even if that team only gets 65 points, I guess he's the most valuable player.
I guess I see it as, if you don't make the playoffs, I mean, there must be better options for the MVP, you know? Like, there, and especially this year where we're talking about Kane and we're talking about Joe Thornton and Sidney Crosby, this year there definitely are a lot of options to choose. I mean, you would have to, if you get 130 points in a season, you win the scoring race by 30 points or something crazy like that, then okay, I probably would have to give that guy the Hart Trophy. But for the most part, I'm against voting a Hart Trophy for a guy whose team misses the playoffs.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, it's not getting that bad in Chicago, but just to bring it back to Kane, man, we are not used to this. I was there about a week ago, a little more than that, when they got thumped at home by LA 5-0, recently waxed by Dallas 6-2 again on home ice. I mean, you're talking about losses to Minnesota, another loss to Dallas before that LA game, as well as St. Louis. I mean, right now, the last win Chicago's had in about its past, let me just count here, I think we're up to about 8 games, is a win over lowly Winnipeg. I don't think there's ever really going to be a panic button to even reach for with this team, but what do you make of this, especially given it's conceivable the Hawks could now fall into a wild card spot and maybe see LA in the first round?
That's the most amazing thing. You were talking about those two losses to Dallas. They've been outscored 11-4 by Dallas over the last 2 weeks. I mean, I it's hard to worry about a team like Chicago.
Sure.
However, I would worry about their long-term chances in the Stanley Cup playoffs if they face LA in the first round, because that's just going to be a hard series. If you win that series, I mean, you're going to be beaten down. And then if you win that series, what if you go into the next round and you play an Anaheim, maybe?
Sure.
Or that would be a tough. An Anaheim, a San Jose, like, you're just, if you're Chicago, I think you'd rather play St. Louis in the first round, which isn't easy either.
Yeah, you're still going to be bruised.
But to face LA in the first round, I mean, that would stink, because here you are, the two best teams we think in the Western Conference, the teams that we think have the best chance to win the Stanley Cup, and they're facing off in the first round. It would be a great first round series, but I'd rather see them in the Western Conference final. And it would just be hard.
And we still might.
And we still might. But as far as them losing these games, I mean, here's a team that has had tons and tons and tons of success. They're in the playoffs. There's no chance of them missing at this point. And you're just kind of finishing the end of the regular season here and getting across that finish line. I wouldn't be surprised if they finish the last couple games there really strong, just to, because I think they're going to recognize that they don't want to face the LA Kings in the first round as well, and that will be enough motivation to kind of keep them into that third place spot in the Central Division. That would be an awesome first round series, though, I must say.
Yeah, it's true. It would definitely be a great way to kick it off. I'm kind of wondering, too, as I look at the playoff picture in the West, I'm starting to get some more love for my own theory, believe it or not, that maybe Nashville, I mean, let's face it, at the end of the day, you're looking at Chicago and LA, and then you're like, okay, who's the team we're not thinking about? Because we played this game on this pod before, you know, would you take the Field or Chicago and LA in the West? And usually people land on the Kings and Hawks, but in the back of your mind, you think, okay, it's got to be someone else who breaks through. Which one of these teams is going to break through? You know, St. Louis, finally, Anaheim. I mean, they've devastating game seven losses the past few years. But you look at Nashville. Last year, Shea Weber was hurt in the playoffs. Pekka Rinne never really recovered. I think it was a knee injury he had like January or early February. He was never quite himself. And I know he hasn't been outstanding this year, but he's still Pekka Rinne. And they didn't have Ryan Johansson. And I would say Philip Forsberg wasn't quite yet the sniper that, I mean, he had a great season, but I think he's gone to at least another half level. If it wasn't for the fact that Nashville stands a really good chance of playing LA, I think I would like the Preds' chances of maybe getting through at least to the West Final.
I think that's the best dark horse pick that you can make in the Western Conference.
Assuming we're calling everyone who is in Chicago and LA a dark horse too, right? I mean, essentially.
Sure.
I think Dallas is a dark horse and they'll win their division.
I mean, is Anaheim a dark horse anymore?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of horse they are, but
I would say I would qualify San Jose as a dark horse just given their history.
Sure. Well, so Anaheim's kind of got San Jose history now just with one cup in 07.
Fair. Yeah, fair. But I do like Nashville as a dark horse pick. It's just, it's all about the matchups. Yeah. Who do you get in that first round? That's going to determine an awful lot, I think. If you get stuck with LA, whoever gets stuck with LA, even if you win, yeah, I don't think you're going to make it out of that Western Conference. It's just too, it's going to be too hard on you. But I do like Nashville. Like you say, like Philip Forsberg wasn't who he was a year ago. Yeah. And Pekka Rinne is a guy who could easily
steal a series on his own.
Exactly.
And you're not going into a playoff series with Mike Ribeiro as your number one, you know?
Yeah.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah, and you got some of these, like, I don't know, guys like Roman Josi. Like,
oh, yeah.
They're just kind of coming on. This is still a fairly mostly young-ish team, and these guys are kind of coming up. So any kind of past failure that they have, it's just kind of a learning experience.
It would just be a crying shame if a guy with a hockey face like Shea Weber never got to raise the cup.
Yeah.
He was born to be on a poster with the Stanley Cup above his head with that mean looking grizzled beard, granite jaw. I can see it now. Don't get too excited, Preds fans. There's a long way to go.
And if Philip Forsberg lifts that cup, oh boy, the Washington Capitals fans, Martin Hirat.
Yeah.
Martin Hirat.
Is that the heavyweight champ for worst trade of the past 5 years, do we think?
Oh, I mean, how can it get any worse?
Sure. Well, I will say, as someone who paid close attention to Ryan McDonagh going to the Rangers, I don't know if we're going back that far, but that one's still, especially when you consider, you probably make a pretty good pair with a certain right-shot superstar defenseman they have there, but that's for another day. We're still focused on the West here. We're going to stay there because Brett Hedekin, color man for the Sharks radio broadcast, is going to come on board and tell us what's going on with San Jose, a team that struggled a bit early but has battled through, been carried by Big Joe, and I guess relatively little Joe and Pavelski, new coach this year. Same old story in San Jose. We'll see. Once the playoffs roll around, we're going to get Brett Hedekin's 2 cents on the Sharks when we're back on Tape to Tape.
Backhand pass to Thornton. Out of Marble. Across the ice. Thornton shoots. Score! Now there he is again, the monster, Brent Burns.
Couture got it over, a quick shot there, score! Patrick Marleau on the point really blasted it. And there's a goal that was desperately needed for the man who wears number 12. Now he gets the pass, down low in front, here's a hurdle chance, score! Tomas Hertl put that off of the defensive skate of Connor Murphy. Sharks 2, Coyotes nothing, and the second unit gets another power play goal. 2-on-1 developing now. Down the left for Donskoy. Moving in, stick handling. Third to the right, shot, score! Melker Karlsson wins it in overtime! What a spectacular finish for the Sharks, and Melker Karlsson is mobbed by his team.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now is the radio color commentator for the San Jose Sharks, longtime former NHLer, Stanley Cup champion, Brett Hedekin. Brett, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
One of the reasons we wanted to have you on was to talk about the, I guess it's still developing situation because the season is still going on here, but Joe Thornton, my goodness, since about the quarter mark of this season, we've been seeing the Joe Thornton I think we were more accustomed to seeing, at least in terms of point production, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. This guy never stopped being a really good player, but what has allowed him to be as dominant as he has been these past few months?
Well, I think, you know, he's in a three-zone player. I think that's the thing. Everybody's just seeing the offensive side of what he's been doing. And by the way, the last 44 games, 13 goals, 41 assists. I mean, that's 54 points in those 44 games. And I think, you know, offensively, he does so many things that are at the highest level. I mean, he anticipates the play. He knows where to go with that puck before he has it. When he has the puck on a stick, he just seems to slow the game down. Those are the things offensively that I just have loved watching this guy play. But when I say three-zone player, the way he has been back-checking, the things he does defensively, people don't really get a chance to appreciate, particularly maybe on TV, because you don't see how hard he works on the backside. And so, you know, for a Selke winner, I mean, if I look back and, you know, you've got guys that you could think about for the Selke, but I think that Joe Thornton is one of the guys that defensively he has been as good as anybody I've seen this year and should be in consideration for that award this year, just because of what he has done, not only offensively, but the type of player he is in all three zones defensively as well.
The Sharks have one of the most, if not the most unique player in the NHL in Brent Burns. He set a franchise record in a couple days ago for points by a defenseman. He's now got 65 and 73 games, and he might even hit 30 goals. I mean, how unique is he as a defenseman in the NHL these days? What is it about his style that really stands out from what you would expect from a regular defenseman?
Well, I think, you know, unpredictable is one of the words that might come to mind offensively, because you never know, you know, what he's going to do offensively. But the things that he does offensively, particularly getting the puck off the wall, bouncing, knocking it out of the air, putting it on a stick, and very quickly getting it back through a guy coming out to block that shot to the net with authority. There's a very few guys that can do it as well as him in the league. I think defensively, about midway through the year, his little subtle things that he has done defensively to get better are starting to pay dividends. I mean, obviously, he's now a plus player, or right there on the cusp. It's not just one under or just on the above side of it. So he's come a long way on the defensive side. And I think by doing that, it's added to the offense. And I think he's realizing that if he can play a more subtle game defensively, don't chase down your mistakes. If you turn the puck over, a lot of defensemen will run after that mistake, trying to fix it instead of just waiting for that to come back. You're trusting your teammates to do their job. And eventually that puck does come back to you. And he's strong enough to muscle out, man people, and he's got a long stick. He's got an active stick. And he can break those plays up even after a mistake. And I think that's part of the game for me that I've seen him really grow this year, where he's not running around in his defensive zone, letting the game come to him, not chasing down those mistakes, has then led to offense. And so he has been a real fun guy to watch this year, just because of how offensive he can be and how dangerous he can be anywhere on the ice at any given time.
Burns and Thornton, clearly huge players for San Jose. But what else has helped San Jose turn it around from sort of scuffling a little bit early on? I mean, new coach and Pete DeBoer, I suppose it took some time to adjust there. But what have you seen unfold over the course of the year, and where have the Sharks made gains to get to where they are now?
Well, I think if you start with the coach and Pete DeBoer, I think the decision-making of, okay, we're going to put this whole captaincy thing to bed. He's made really quick, decisive decisions that he's thought out. There's no doubt. He's thoughtful. He's a smart guy. And once he makes that decision, he gets guys to buy into it. So he put the captaincy on Pavelski, who I think has embraced that role. And Joe Thornton has continued to lead this way, the way he likes to lead it. He doesn't really need the captaincy on his sweater to be the guy that he is on a daily basis. He leads by coming to the rink and enjoying and loving the game of hockey, and I think he's enjoyed that role better as well. So that whole thing got put to bed. He knew that this team needed to be more offensive. He needed to get the guys to buy in, the defensemen to get up in the play, to be more active defensively. That has been bought in. And I think from there, you know, he's held guys accountable. You know, if you haven't done your job on a nightly basis, like lately, the number one power play unit has struggled, and so he started the number two unit lots of times. And just because that's the way he has been all year, if you're not going, you're going to sit on the bench. And I think that accountability has kind of gone through the whole team. But I guess from there, you know, Martin Jones, the goaltending that this guy has shown this year, and now James Reimer, you know, coming in from Toronto, he has had, you know, two shutouts in four games. I mean, he's played tremendous. So the goaltending, I think, this year at times has been bleak. And I think Martin Jones has the ability to do that. And then if you work your way from there, guys like Jonas Donskoy, if you guys get a chance to really watch this guy play, really, you're going to, it'll put a smile on your face just the way he plays. He's a hardworking kid. He was the MVP of the Finnish Elite League last year in the playoffs. So he knows how to play in pressure. He loves to hold on to the puck, but draw people to him and make the right play. He's a hustler. And I think that has added a lot to this team to know that the depth now with him and Melker Carlson, the emergence of Chris Tierney, these guys, you know, down the middle, they're so strong now. And you got Thornton, Couture. Usually you've got Marlowe, then that third line center, and then Chris Tierney, your fourth line center. So that balance now through the fourth line has really helped this team win a lot of hockey games.
You mentioned James Reimer. Of course, people here in Toronto saw him close for a long time. He's shone so far in a short sample size. I know Martin Jones has been strong, but do you get a sense it's predetermined who that game one starter will be and that it will be Jones? Or do you think there's a chance Reimer could use the last 3 weeks of the season to take that spot?
I think the way Pete DeBoer has gone throughout this year is exactly, you know, he's going to play the guy that he feels is playing the best to give their team a chance to win. And I don't think it matters when it comes time to the playoff. I think if Reimer continues to show that he is playing elite, and which he has showed in these first four games, and he has a hot hand and continues to, every time he gets in there, delivers, I mean, it's going to definitely challenge him to make that decision. But Martin Jones, I think, you know, has that spot now. He's earned it. He's earned the trust of his teammates. And I think, you know, if it comes down to that decision being made, Reimer will have earned it. No doubt about that.
Right now, it looks like the Sharks are, well, they're lining up with the Ducks in the playoffs if things hold for the rest of the way. The Ducks, of course, have been awesome in the second half. What do you think of that matchup? Do the Sharks line up well against them? Is that going to be a tight series, or is that one you think they'd rather stay away from?
I think looking at, you know, in the past, I've been covering this team, I guess, 6-7 years now since retiring. I've probably, you know, wouldn't have wanted either one of those matchups between L.A. or Anaheim in the past. And I think this might be the very first year where I said, you know what, I'll take the Sharks against either one of those teams because, you know, right from the goaltender out and the defensive core with Burns, you know, I mean, you can match up him up against Drew Doughty. I mean, obviously people would talk about Doughty as a Norris Trophy candidate and maybe the leader right now, or Carlson, obviously, from Ottawa. But, you know, Brent Burns has to be in that consideration, the way he has played all season long. And so you've got that one guy versus one guy. You've got Quick versus Jones or even Reimer. You've got six defensemen now that can play. You got Roman Pollock, who can play an abrasive style that could match up against any forward on Anaheim or L.A., and Brendan Dillon as well. So you've got a good 5-6 now where you never really had that in the past. And then you've got that balance through four lines with, you know, Patrick Marleau as your third line center, you know, 20 goals, 21 assists or whatever he has. That's a nice problem to have. And so finally, I'm looking at this team as saying, I'm not really scared if I'm the Sharks of either one of those teams. I think they could win either one of those series. I really do think that this is maybe the first year I've been able to really say that with confidence.
Well, and picking up on the history, I mean, we all know San Jose's had a tough go in the postseason. I feel like it's almost a played-out theme by now. Is that the sense you get from the players that, you know what, if this is 2011, maybe we're still talking about how, you know, they have some mental ghosts or what have you. But, I mean, they're so used to these questions at this point. I mean, usually the only way you can answer all these questions is by winning the Stanley Cup, but I feel like it's sort of being a dead horse to some degree. Do you get the sense there's anything, any ghosts these guys are still dragging around because they haven't been able to go all the way and realize what many people have seen as their full potential?
I think guys like Joe Thornton, the way he has inspired this team this year and the commitment he has shown to get back in the playoffs, I think they've got a lot to prove. I think those ghosts are probably, you know, those are scars. I know I had scars, you know, on series that I lost. You know, Stanley Cup in 1994 and 2002. Those left scars on me, but I think they made me better. I think there's lots of situations that have made this team better through some of those scars. But I think the, you know, last night I put a smile on my face where Joe Thornton got hammered, you know, by the captain, David Backes. He was covering that short side. The point Backes came down on Joe Thornton as he was coming up the top of the circle, engaged on a one-on-one and hammered him. That very same shift, Joe Pavelski ran David Backes in the far corner in the defensive zone. And it kind of put a smile on my face. And the reason why is because this team, for the first time, again, watching this team in 6-7 years, has got some pushback. They said, no, you're not going to, it's not on my watch anymore. I'm going to push back and I'm going to come after you if you go after one of my teammates. And that's the sign for me of a team that's come a long way. They're committed to one another. And I think those are the little things that I think will win you a series moving forward. And you guys know you've got to have pushback and you've got to have that fight in the dog. And I think they finally got a little bit of fight in that dog.
I'm guessing your personal scars included hearing the ringing of Nathan Lafayette's shot off the post from 94 for years, probably.
Oh, man. You know, people talk about that, and, you know, the guys on the team don't really think about that as, you know, that should have went in the back of the net. I mean, that was a great play. It was a great shot, you know, and it hit the post. There's nothing you can do. I mean, I think if that game was 5 minutes longer, I think we maybe tie it and maybe win that game. And, you know, we were coming on in Game 7, and I think the 2 days between Game 6 and Game 7 allowed, you know, the New York Rangers, the older team, find their legs a little bit to win that hockey game. So you could measure it a lot of things, but yeah, that's one you want to think, boy, if that would have went the back of the net, who knows what would have happened. But what a great series that was, and I, you know, it made me a better player, and knowing you could play in series like that, and boy, what a time that was.
That was a heck of a run by the 94 Canucks. Brett Hedekin, of course, a defenseman on that team, now a radio analyst covering another team hoping to make a deep run at last, the San Jose Sharks. Brett, thanks very much for joining us today.
Rory, Ryan, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks. Good talking to you guys.
That's Brett Hedekin checking in from lovely Northern California. When we come back on Tape to Tape, going to put a bow on things with some bold summer predictions for Canada's crappy teams. You're going to want to stick around for that. Tape to Tape. We're coming back.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet magazine, here's Jordan Heath Rawlings.
For most Maple Leafs fans, Mitch Marner needs no introduction. But on February 12th, the rest of the hockey world got to meet him, too.
Lead pass out through the center, ice and across the line. Marner wakes. Look at this play. Marner, magic, scores! Mitch Marner ties this hockey game. What a goal!
It's been more than a month now since Marner, the London Knights standout and fourth overall pick of last year's draft, scored the goal of the hockey season and set Toronto hockey fans to dreaming of glories to come. And that's the real beauty of a goal like that. Not what it does for Marner's current team, or even for his future team. It wasn't a game-changing goal, and it wasn't just a sign that the prospect really was worth the draft pick. It was hope when there wasn't much hope in Toronto. a reminder that even in the midst of a rebuild, there is light at the end of that tunnel. In this edition of The Play, we take a look at Canada's largest hockey market and how it lionizes young men with slick hands and big dreams. Fans see in 5 seconds what they hope to see in 5 years' time. Fans have hopes, and a goal like this validates them. So yes, Mitch Marner's goal says something about the kind of player who scored it, but it also says something about the kind of fans who watched it.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine on newsstands now. And available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones.
Tape to tape. Ready to rock out in this final segment. We need something forceful because big change is needed in this country. Probably in a few respects, but as it pertains to the hockey teams, definitely there is a lot to talk about when theorizing about how things could be different. So would you agree with this premise? This assessment of the 7 Canadian teams, none of which are going to come within spitting distance of the playoffs after, mind you, a year in which 5 of them made it last year. If you were to group them, could you group them thusly? The Canadians are over here on an island because they lost their MVP goalie this year. They're going to get him back next year. Whether, you know, we can talk further about whether it's maybe they're just, you know, putting a Band-Aid on a much bigger wound if they say, well, we're going to get them back and be good again. But they kind of exist in a area unto themselves. Then over on the other side, you've got Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, who to varying degrees can say whatever's gone on in the recent past, good or bad, we are in a position now where we are cultivating young players. We already have, to varying degrees, guys on the roster who are going to push us forward, and we have more coming. So if you can hang in, fans, we're going to be okay. And then in the middle, you have Vancouver and Ottawa, and no one really knows what the hell is going on there.
Vancouver can almost be in a circle of their own. They are the worst off team.
You think?
Among the kids. They're just kind of caught in the middle between trying to ice a competitive team and trying to rebuild, and they're not... There's no.
Were they just living in a fantasy land where, I mean, is there, can we think of an example of the rebuild on the fly that led to a Stanley Cup? Because I can't without really drilling down on it, but it certainly seems like that's what Vancouver is committed to. And I guess because they're sort of in a unique position whereby even if they wanted to trade their aging stars who happen to be freakishly close twin brothers, presumably, I don't think there's ever been a sense either of them, well, both of them, because it would have to be both, want to go somewhere. And that's the thing, is that presumably you'd have to find a team with enough cap space to take them both if you even wanted to go down that path, and they wanted to go down that path. Not going to happen.
And that's why that seems unlikely that's ever going to happen. They seem destined to retire as Vancouver Canucks. So they're also probably the two guys you would get the most for if you decided to trade some of these. So that takes the, I guess that's maybe why that they can't really move full into that rebuild, is because everything else that they might trade to kind of take that step back, it'll probably give you some good return, but the real money is in trading the Sedins, which you can't really do. So you're kind of caught there, I guess.
So if we agree Vancouver then is the least exciting, most likely to be back where it is in the mushy middle toward bottom third.
Yeah, I think they're gonna fall down. Ball they're going to keep
okay, well, then maybe that's
so.
A good thing.
Yeah.
So what about Ottawa then? I mean, we've heard Eugene Melnyk say no one is safe. Do you think this team says we just got to hang in, get Kyle Turris healthy for the whole year? You know, a couple other injuries. There's something there. Mark Stone, Eric Karlsson, a perennial MVP candidate at this point. Dion Phaneuf, a full ride in the top four. Do you think Ottawa says that's enough to get us back in the playoffs? Because it doesn't sound like that's the way Melnyk's thinking.
Yeah, I don't expect them to make any drastic changes, really. I first of all, the East isn't the best conference necessarily, so you could kind of find your way. You could kind of sneak in, I think, in the coming years. And the weird thing about Ottawa, I think, is that they actually had some pretty good years in there with, obviously, Eric Karlsson leading the way, but Mark Stone had a really good year. Bobby Ryan bounced back and had a pretty good year. Mike Hoffman's kind of rising up as well.
He's
so you have some stuff there. It's just, yeah, I mean, they're kind of caught. There's nothing there that really inspires you to think this is a team that's definitely on the rise. And, look out for the Ottawa Senators in the next couple of years, where you can kind of see that coming, at least the promise of it in Toronto, where there's a lot of work to be done. But everybody's accepted that we're moving in the right direction, at least, where Ottawa, I don't know, there's just not a lot there to inspire a lot of confidence in where they're going. But they, at the same time, that, like I said, they do have some good pieces, so I wouldn't want to just completely give up. What I will say is, as much as Vancouver, as terrible as they look, I kind of like the idea of a team not just throwing their arms up in the air and just giving up and tanking. I'm so tired of that.
Really?
Yeah. I am. I mean, the goal is to get into the playoffs, and I
don't know.
I'm not a pro tanker.
I am a big believer in, if you're going to be bad all the way. Don't mess around with being caught perpetually in the middle. The system, even though they're moving away from it, still rewards finishing near the bottom. There's not really, I mean, when you're talking about the true game changers, you find them at the top of the draft. They don't come up in free agency. Yes, you still have to draft well. Yeah, I mean, it's crucial to draft well beyond the first round, but I don't know. To me, like, that shows some level of commitment to say, I mean, it's taken a level of commitment to do what the Leafs are doing, don't you think?
Oh, for sure it does. But, I mean, you can talk about the top of the draft, and yes, that's where you'll find the Connor McDavid's. Well, I mean, he's a little unique.
Every 15 years.
Yeah, you'll find the Jack Eichels there. You'll find the Austin Matthews up there. But, I mean, look at the Oilers. Look at all the first-round picks that teams are made in the later rounds, where you have to hit those draft picks for it to actually count. So that's why I think you can get by. And, yeah, like, we can look at teams such as Chicago that was bad and rebuilt through the draft that way, and LA bottomed out and got Drew Doughty, and they kind of built that way. But then I'm looking at a team like Edmonton. I've lived with the Florida Panthers for 20 years dealing with this stuff, and they've had a lot of high first-round draft picks, and they haven't won a playoff game.
But ultimately, they are going to get better because they drafted Ekblad first and Barkov second overall.
Yes, you would think so, and that's why this feels different. But they've also drafted guys like Nathan Horton really high before. Like,
sure.
It's not
a cure-all. It's not a panacea, but I just think it's the most logical way to go about it to me, especially if you're going to do it the way the Leafs have and be like, we are all in on this, getting, you know, trying to get 12 picks in the draft and stuff like that.
Okay, that's different. So that's fine. Like, if you want to accumulate as many draft picks
as you
can. But
that involves selling players who presumably could help you get more points. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but not necessarily guys like the Sedins. Like, you can keep guys who are kind of difference maker. Like, I think it's so hard to get out of that losing culture, that if once you get sucked down into that vortex.
Fair,
like,
enough with the Oilers. It's
easier said than done.
You can't stay there too long. You can only dip your toe in.
You
so
can't. Yeah.
Sticking with the Oilers, would you say out of that group of Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, teams we agreed have good prospects, some good young players already, do you see Edmonton, because of McDavid and because of the fact we all expect them to make a major move this summer, as being the most likely to jet forward next year? Or do you think it's one of those other teams, probably Winnipeg or Calgary, maybe the least, not quite yet?
That's a good question. I mean, you would think Edmonton, but we've picked them so many times before. I think Winnipeg expected a little bit more out of themselves this year. As much as, they're looking towards the future as brighter days are ahead.
They kind of screwed themselves by making the playoffs last year.
Exactly, yeah. This is a disappointing year. And Jonathan Willis wrote a piece for Sportsnet.ca yesterday looking at Mark Scheifele. And with Brian Little out, Scheifele has stepped into that number one center role, and he's been awesome.
Really good.
Really, really good there. And so now you have to wonder if he's going to hold on to that heading into next year. And there's a guy who...
Big guy.
Big guy, yeah. He can score a lot of points, good possession numbers. He can play in all situations. That's a guy who's been on the team for a couple years now and has kind of arrived as an NHLer. Now we're going to probably see his breakout sooner than later. So I think... I mean, Calgary has some guys like Gaudreau and Monahan that have also arrived, but Winnipeg seems to have more of these guys. The fact that they signed Dustin Byfuglien to shore up their back end there really...
And Winnipeg's I've been writing about this in advance of the playoff preview Sportsnet magazine's putting together, but they fall into that LA Kings mold of big, heavy team, right? They haven't done it nearly with as much success as St. Louis and LA, but... Winnipeg is shaping up to be a team that can really lean on you.
Yeah, and I think next year we're going to stop worrying, or they're going to stop worrying about Andre Pavelec. I mean, he's going to have one more year on his deal unless they buy him out or something. But, I mean, when he's making $3.9 million, you kind of feel like you have to play him sometimes. But he's not good. I mean, you have Michael Hutchison there and I think there are, like Connor Hellebuck, there are better options as you're trying to move forward. So I think Winnipeg is probably the best positioned Canadian team to kind of bounce back into that playoffs just because they were there last year.
Are you including the Canadians in that mix?
Well...
Or are we going with out of those four teams or out of all seven teams?
No, that's true. Montreal, I mean, I guess I kind of see them differently because I think they would have been a playoff team this year had Carey Price not got hurt.
It's a huge asterisk year.
Yeah. Yeah, so Montreal would be the best. They're the best Canadian team right now.
But their question is not, can we get back into the playoffs next year? Their question is, based on what we've seen without Carey Price, was it ridiculous to think that we could be going to the Stanley Cup final? And do we still have miles and miles and miles to go before we could actually think of ourselves as a team that could win 16 playoff games, 4 series, go through a Tampa Bay, a Washington, and then beat a Chicago? I mean, there has to be a sense that while in the back of their minds they probably knew they weren't quite there, now where do they think they are, and is it a lock that the Canadians have to go out and get someone who can play a serious top six role this summer?
I think so. I think they have to. I'm starting with the coach. I think we can agree that the coach has to go.
But he won't be.
You don't think so?
I don't want to say 100%, but if you ask me to lay a hundo down on yes or no Michel Therrien in October, I think he's coming back.
So this is one of the situations where the players actually move before the coach. Not that they're going to trade out.
I just think it's a situation where, like we said, it is such an asterisk season because of the Price thing and because he is, you know, he's Mark Bergevin's guy. Not that Mark Bergevin won't make the hard decision if it comes down to it, but I think he's willing to give his man a pass and say, all right, let's get everyone back. And I'll do what I can do in the offseason, and we'll give you another rip. That's what I think.
That's crazy.
I think that's actually probably the most disheartening thing for a lot of Canadians fans is that they do see, I mean, Michel Therrien, I don't even know if he's polarizing because I don't know how many people are in his corner at this point, but there is certainly a large, more or less analytics-minded crew who would tell you, don't even bother watching Montreal until they have a different coach.
Right. We are expecting, like you said earlier, a big move from Edmonton this summer. Finally, this is the time that they maybe can trade one of their forwards for a defenseman. We're maybe half expecting Toronto to do something, like maybe trade a Nazem Kadri out. But who would you say is the most likely Canadian team to make a big deal? Is it Montreal?
I think it's probably Edmonton and Montreal are 1 and 1A. I think we were joking earlier without the benefit of recording that we're not even calling it a big move if the Leafs sign Stamkos because it's been speculated so much about, we're almost putting that aside and saying, all right, well, that notwithstanding, you know, which team, not that I necessarily expect that to happen, but if it does happen, it's not going to be utter shock, yeah. Right? So yes, I think Montreal and Edmonton, possibly with each other, they have to be the biggest candidates because Edmonton clearly needs more defensemen and probably some kind of rejigging on the forward lines. And the Canadiens, unless they really believe in one of their prospects, and I don't know who that would be, they have to be thinking they're going for some outside help.
Calgary's definitely going to do something with their goalies.
Sure.
I mean, I might take a flyer on Jonathan Bernier.
I've been on that one for a while.
Yeah.
I don't think the Leafs will let him go now because they must be like, well, what the hell? We got 1 year left at $4 million. Might as well keep him around and see what we got.
Why not? What else do you have? It's all a big experiment at this point, right?
But Calgary's getting a goalie, no doubt.
Yes. Yeah. If Bernier is there, I'm with you. I take the chance on him, absolutely. I can't imagine that he's going to... I don't think it's possible for him to have another year as bad as this one. The way it started, like, my goodness. That has to have been... I mean, is it the worst start any goalie's ever had to a season?
And here's the thing with Jonathan Bernier. There's a much longer, bigger body of work to suggest that he is a decent goalie than he isn't. But yes, we'll see what happens there. Just one of the many questions Canadian teams will be facing this summer. Something that is not up for debate. You should be tuning in to Tape every week. That's all we have for you this time out, but you know we'll be back. You know you can find us at sportsnet.ca. You know you can subscribe, iTunes, follow Rory at Rory Boylan, follow me at Dixon on Sports. That's it for this week, but come back next time for more glass rattling hockey action on Tape to Tape.
Back in the days on the boulevard I landed, we used to kick routines and the presence was fitting. It was I, the abstract,
and me, the five-footer. I kicks the mad style, so step off the frankfurter.
Yo, Fife, you remember that routine that we used to make spiffy like Mr. Clean?
A tidbit, a spidgin. I don't get the message, so you got to run the pigeon.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
But then grab the microphone and let your words rip.
Now here's a funky introduction of how nice I am. Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. I'm like an energizer cause you see I last long. My crew is never ever whack because we stand strong. Now if you say my style is back, I swear you're dead wrong. I say that body and El Segundo, then push it along.